This Regionally Speaking Reporters Roundtable Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Let's start things off to find out what's happening over in Michigan City and environs. And for that, we're going to call on Kelly Smith. She's a reporter for the Michigan City News-Dispatch. And Kelly, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm sure one of the most exciting times to be a reporter is when you get to see a really big name show up in town. And I know that was the case here recently with James Comey coming in to be the very first speaker for this year's series of Sinai Forum speeches at Purdue University Northwest. This one was so big, I know they had to move it to a different venue. Tell us about the surrounding that you were able to catch when he was in Michigan City. And to start things off, a little bit about his prepared remarks. I know he got into a lot of things, too, on the Q&A session, but he had some interesting things to talk about there on the prepared remarks, too.
Absolutely. Yes, it was really cool to be able to see somebody who is such a high-profile public figure. I've interviewed some really cool people in my coverage of the Sinai Forum over the last 6 years or so, but he's just so timely. And yes, they had to move it to the blue chip. He had security. It was a bit unlike any other that I've covered. They had like the metal detectors coming in, and so it was very secure. The Stardust Event Center was fully open and packed, and it was really cool because there were a lot of students there, a lot of students from Purdue Northwest, and they got the chance to ask questions of him. So that was really nice to see. But his speech, I think, resonated with, or would resonate with, anybody in the crowd. Certainly there were people from different political parties and just who carry different ideologies, but what he talked about was very nonpartisan. He discussed kind of his own leadership style and the inspiration for it. Growing up, working as a high schooler in a grocery store, his former manager, he was talking about how that man showed a very good balance of toughness and kindness so that the kids recognized, you know, that there are these expectations and they're there to do their jobs, but that the person who's overseeing them as they do their work does care about them.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, for a man to employ a whole bunch of teenage boys and stock clerks, somehow he managed to make them care about the grocery business and want to do well at it. So that's something that he's carried forward. Then he fast-forwarded to his time spent as a federal prosecutor under U.S. Attorney Helen Fahey. And he was saying that she had an excellent balance of both confidence and humility, and that she had no problem allowing him and others to step into the spotlight, and was still able to get the job done and champion them and help guide them. And she didn't require that kind of attention.
I know in your story, I know you mentioned, too, about the fact and talking about how he seemed to have gotten his lessons learned as a young person with not only what he learned from his part-time boss, the supermarket manager, and also, mm-hmm. too, from Helen as well, too. And now that helped shape him when he got to move along to some very important positions along the way.
Absolutely. He was discussing his role at the FBI when he took over, and he was discussing minute details that somebody in his position probably wouldn't maybe think about, but it was important to him that he wore his white button-down shirt, mm-hmm. To appeal to the agents who'd been there, you know, since he called them the Hoover agents.
Uh-huh.
So to the agents who'd been there, he wanted there to be that continuity. He wanted them to be comfortable. But he also sat down and in a different spot in his first meeting. Mm-hmm. To kind of appeal more to, I don't want to say necessarily millennial, but like the newer, younger agents, to let them know, you know, yes, I'm in charge, but my style is different. I'm approachable. Again, he went out of his way to kind of consider the small things like his seat placement, the shirts that he wore,
mm-hmm.
As a means of conveying that he is both like his past employers, tough and kind and confident and humble at the same time.
Now, I understand that the Q&A portion of the presentation was really interesting. And you mentioned, of course, the first part, the prepared remarks were very nonpartisan. But he got in there and talked very seriously about President Donald Trump when he came time to answering questions from the audience.
Sure. And he did so in direct response when asked, questions directly about it. He, at one point, expressed candidly that he hopes the Democrats pull it out, pull out the win, in the upcoming elections, prompted by a question from an audience member who questioned a tweet that he had made in, I want to say it was July, mm-hmm. Where he cautioned young people on the left from clinging to socialism. And so he explained to the audience when he was clarifying his tweet that it's not because he hates socialism while he's not a socialist. He just doesn't think that socialism will win in the U.S., especially right now. Mm-hmm. So he was saying there's definitely, this is definitely, in his opinion, time for a change in leadership style and a change to the Democratic Party again. But he was just cautioning against the best way to go about getting there, I guess. And at one point he made the remark, my former party, which kind of, piqued my interest. He said, my former party. Mr. Comey has been a registered Republican a long time. He said that when he was in the private sector, he made the maximum donation allowable by law to the presidential campaigns of both John McCain, Senator John McCain, when he was running against Barack Obama, and Mitt Romney as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I feel like Republicans have traded in our values and used the term my former party. So I think that was just kind of a telling about where he is right now.
Now, I know that in your story in the News Dispatch, what Mr. Comey had to say at the Sinai Forum speaking engagement, you closed out your story with a very interesting way, I suppose, that you wouldn't necessarily think a speaker would close it out, that I guess he, and you can explain better about how this he got into this, but one of the last things he said when he finished up was, it says, we're going to be okay. What did he mean by that? And I guess from what you gather from the comments at the speech, why he said it?
Yes. So he was asked several questions from the audience.
Uh-huh.
But the general underlying theme, I would say, of several of them kind of alluded to that there's some unrest politically and just within our country right now, which is pretty apparent to anybody, no matter how you vote or how you feel about the hot button issues that are out there. It's kind of a time of turmoil, and it has been for the last couple of years. And he was talking about progress. I think someone asked him something about, are we going to recover from this? Is this going to ruin our country, the state of things the way they are now? He went as far as to compare Donald Trump to a forest fire.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that him coming into leadership is like a forest fire and that it's caused a lot of damage very quickly. He said, but in the wake of such a disaster, there's growth. He said he's confident that the U.S. will continue to progress in terms of, how we function within our country, like ourselves, Democrats, Republicans, and then how we function on kind of an international scale with our relations with other countries. He said there's not enough time in a 4-year term for any president, Donald Trump or anyone else, to, just completely ruin a country. 4 years is not enough time to do that. And that we can be confident that there will be progress on the other end of, like, when Donald Trump comes out of the presidency. He referenced World War I and how after that time where all of the country came together, we're fighting World War I, then suddenly the war ends and up to a third of white American men were members of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
And then they progressed from there and the country entered World War II. And it's another time of togetherness where we all have this common goal and we're all Americans. And then World War II ends and suddenly were experiencing, you know, McCarthyism right then. And then the country came out of that. And I want to say maybe the unifying event he referred to would have been, he made some reference to the September 11th attacks, I believe. You know, it was a time where everyone was American.
Right.
And that was just what it was. No one was talking about Democrats and Republicans. We were all American. And so he was saying this is just kind of the blowback that you can expect after a time like that. And he expects that we'll progress going forward. And then he thanked the audience saying, you know, the fact that you're here shows that you're a part of that, that you want to be part of moving the country forward. Thank you.
Well, it sounded like the James Comey speech and the Q&A session right after that was probably one of the most interesting things to catch, and certainly a great way to start out the Sinai Forum series for this particular year, being up there in Michigan City. One of the other stories I know that Kelly Smith, you with the Michigan City News Dispatch, have covered has been the plans to get a homeless shelter set up in Michigan City. Tell us who's interested in doing this and what they have planned for.
Oh, sure. This is something that I just covered last week. It's been pretty big in the news. So just for some background info, we've got here what is called the Interfaith Community PADS homeless shelter. And forgive me, the acronym off the top of my head now that we're interviewing is not coming to me.
Yeah.
But it's something about them being able to aid people with emergency shelter. Anyway, Interfaith Community PADS has been operating in Michigan City for 18 years.
Wow.
And it's a group of eight churches who basically take turns throughout the cold months to house. Up until last year, it was just men. Last year, they opened a women's shelter as well. They opened it up to women and children. But until last year, it was just men. And there was a rotating schedule. So each of these eight churches, you know, they would have a night or two, and it was their turn. And then from there, the people who needed their services would have to go on to the next place. They get a meal, they come in. He was describing their services, like there's a breathalyzer offered at the door, and that doesn't necessarily exclude someone from being able to stay there, but they might have to go into what Harrison Hope Camp, the director of the shelter now, he called an adult timeout, where they, you know, go and kind of sober up, and then they're admitted in with others, and they connect them with the resources at Keys to Hope, where there's case management. People can go there, they can shower, they can do their laundry, they can make their resumes, they can practice interviewing and, you know, kind of work on some of their soft skills. So there's kind of that element to it. So it's evolved as the years have gone on, but again, it's had all of these locations. Sacred Heart used to be one of them when it was operating as a church. I think it was Easter of last year? I think the Diocese of Gary closed Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
And so they were not allowed to use that as one of their shelters anymore. But the diocese offered to donate the Sacred Heart church building to Interfaith Community PADS for a permanent, as a permanent shelter, which eliminates the need for men and women who need their services from having to figure out which church they're supposed to be at tonight. It eliminates the need for eight churches to have, you know, 100 blankets on hand and paper plates and anything that they need. All those churches needed that. So it's really going to eliminate, or, you know, the supporters of it, the people who are asking or who asked the Board of Zoning Appeals for the use variance to turn the church into a homeless shelter. They were saying it eliminates the waste of time and of resources by keeping it all at one place.
Well, it sounds like if this works out here, if based on the plans that they've submitted and gotten approval from the planning zoning people about, it's going to work out very well. And it'll certainly be a much more, as you say, a much more efficient way to be able to take care of the Michigan City's homeless on a regular basis. And they'll have a good place to be, and it's going to spread the responsibilities out among all the church members rather than each one having to take a turn each evening to make sure that somebody has some place to stay, to be sure.
Mm-hmm, right.
Is there any word as to when they hope to have this facility ready to go? I know it's just going through the planning stages right now, but I'm sure they have some ideas.
Right. Well, they weren't able to use it this past year, like I said, because of the the diocese's decision to close it as a church. So what needs to happen now is that the city planning department, the fire marshal, and then whatever any other necessary city departments would be, they didn't really indicate that during the meeting, but they just have to go in and make sure that the building is up to the standard of housing people. And then they have to determine how many would be able to stay. They would have to establish like a maximum capacity for the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Holtkamp was saying that in his 3 years, he took over as executive director beginning in 2016, I believe he said. And he said his first year, there were something like 85 men that they serviced.
Wow.
Now, that's not 85 nights or 85 times.
Right,
85
right.
men multiple times, you know, from several of the men. And it went up to 90 his second year. And last year, it was 119 men. So he's seeing a steady increase, you know, these last 3 years that he's been there. He said last year alone, the shelter served what they call a bed night, is one person staying for one night. And the shelter operated at 8 different churches and provided 7,000 bed nights.
Oh my gosh.
In one season.
Yeah.
And this is a 6-month season. So he was saying that, you know, this is very... It will be such a more efficient way of letting people know what services are available to them, where and when, as opposed to them having to guess which church they should show up at today.
Well, Kelly, let's touch briefly here on the last story that you had up there to take a look at here from the News-Dispatch, and you certainly don't need to go into the gory details, but fill us in about the fact that there's now a second jury trial scheduled against a former Michigan City police officer, but it's not going to be held when apparently it was originally planned. It's going to be a little later in the year. Tell us a little bit about the case and why they've asked for a continuance.
Absolutely. A former Michigan City police officer, Thomas Jackson, he was charged with 4 counts of rape April of last year.
Mm-hmm.
For allegedly, sorry about that, if you can hear my notifications. Allegedly engaged in various sexual acts with a woman who was in her early 20s, but who authorities claim does not have the emotional or mental capacity to consent to sex.
Uh-huh.
I believe she was 25 during the first trial, which was earlier this year, March and April. And according to, I want to say, the probable cause document, I don't have it in front of me, but one of the court documents says that this woman has the mental and emotional capacity of a child aged 10 to 12.
Well, that's the impression I get, that she's a certain, she may not have some problems, but she certainly doesn't have the facility to really, really understand what might have been happening. And the house, that makes it, I guess, the matter even more serious, because it would appear then allegedly that the former police officer might have be judged to have taken advantage of her. So.
Right. And that's the concern. He actually testified in his own defense in the spring, and he admitted to all of the acts that he'd been accused of. He admitted to having engaged in those with her, but he maintains that it wasn't rape. He didn't force her. She was a willing participant. And so it was basically left up to the jury to decide whether or not she has the ability to consent. As I said in the beginning, he was charged with 4 counts. He was actually acquitted of one of the counts, the first count, because it was a specific date. It specified that there was sexual activity on March 5th of last year.
Yeah.
And I guess the jury didn't believe that the state was able to prove that something happened on that specific date. The remaining 3 charges are general, so they don't specify a date. They just specify different sexual acts and whether or not they occurred. And again, he said, yes, all 3 of these sexual acts did occur. It wasn't rape. So I guess it sounds like some of the jurors agreed with him and some did not. And so now there's going to be a second trial, and it'll be up to this new jury to determine whether or not this woman was legally able to consent to these acts.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be, I'm going to say, October. He was supposed to go before a jury. They came to court here in the last couple of weeks and cited personal reasons as a reason they need a continuance. Honestly, I don't know what those personal reasons are, but The judge did grant it, and so he's going to allow them to come back for a second trial in, I want to say, January.
I think December 17th is what I know your story mentions. That's when it's scheduled now, unless it gets changed again. And they have some other pretrial hearings, I know, in between, but that's the way things look right now. If the jury comes back with the guilty verdicts against former Officer Jackson, how long could he find himself in prison if he's convicted?
Well, again, he faces three charges now. One is one he can never be tried on again because he was acquitted. The remaining three charges, each one carries a potential sentence of 3 to 16 years. And we say, when I write, I try to write in the Indiana Department of Corrections because that doesn't necessarily mean prison time. It could mean prison, and it could mean work release, and it could mean probation. It could mean a combination of the three.
Yeah, that's up to the state to determine that, yeah.
It's up to the state to try him. It's up to the jury to decide guilty or not guilty, and then the judge determines the sentence based on recommendations from the state. Yes, you're right. But again, there are three counts remaining, and so each one carries that 3 to 16 years. So it's 16 times 3.
Well,
that's 48, I think.
Kelly, it sounds like you've had a number of great stories that you've been able to offer up your readers and online as well as in print for the News Dispatch, and we thank you very much for sharing your stories with us today. We really appreciate you taking time to talk here on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.
We're talking with Kelly Smith. She's a reporter for the Michigan City News Dispatch. Insiders offer is a perspective on the weekly top stories that come out on Inside Indiana Business with Gary Dick on television. And we have one conversation for you. This week, the host is joined by his guests, and they're talking about the 10th anniversary of the housing crisis, Indiana's delegations to Italy and Canada, and Electric Works in Fort Wayne gaining a key approval.
Well, each week, a group of insiders joins me to offer perspective on some of the week's top stories. This week, sounding off on the 10th anniversary of the financial crisis. And it was a rough ride for the Brickyard this year. Our insiders this week, Vox Global Managing Director Mike Marker, also Center for Business and Economic Research Director at Ball State, Mike Hicks, and Kiwanis Youth Programs Executive Director Christina Hale. And welcome one and all to the insiders for another edition. And Mike, we'll start out with you on somber, I guess, anniversary. 10 years, doesn't seem like it's been 10 years, but a decade ago was the financial meltdown, the Lehman Brothers, the housing crisis, and all that took place back then. Lessons learned as you think back to how bad things got back then and fast forward to today?
Well, yeah, I mean, some really good news. We're in the second longest expansion in American history. This time next year, it'll be the longest if we can hold on to it for another year. Many of the factors that played into it have recovered. Housing is mostly recovered. Maybe in central Indiana, really good shape. Maybe outlying places still struggling.
So that's what you were saying off camera here, that recovery, not even throughout the state.
Right. I mean, we've seen incomes rebound. Certainly labor markets are good. If you want a job, you can have a job today. But we're not seeing the housing market prices and construction are now pushing back up in central Indiana, maybe Porter, parts of Lake County, maybe Floyd County. But there are about 60 counties in the state where it's really not profitable yet to build a home. So we're at about half of new home construction where we were in pre-recession years. So we didn't have the big bust in housing because we didn't have a big boom. But we're not back everywhere yet.
Yeah. And I think it's something that we should be a little bit concerned about, because when you look at our talent attraction and talent retention, home ownership and the affordability of that is an absolute staple in that across the state and has been. So we need to watch that. And I do think when you look at income across sectors, we have a bit of a housing affordability crisis as well. When you look at rents, you have more Hoosiers paying more than 50% of their monthly wages on rent and utilities, and that's not sustainable, and that trickles down to their ability to pay for ongoing education and health care and other life necessities. So it's homes and it's also rentals.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't know how millennials, Gen Zers, and those to follow are going to live. You know, there are things like the tiny house movement, and they're much more transient than we've ever been before in history, aside from, you know, hunter-gatherer times, certainly in this century. However, there are some things to look at as we chessboard this out down the road, like if we ever do double-track the South Shore, which I think we will, housing stock, and that could really truly revitalize that area of the state. There could be other transformative projects that sometimes, you know, when we decide to get a little bit more ambitious, maybe we build high-speed rail between Chicago and Indianapolis, dream bigger. That could have a positive impact.
A lot of effort being made to help diversify the economy, not just in terms of the sectors of the economy, but globally. And not one, but two international trade missions taking place in the week ahead. Governor Holcomb, Lieutenant Governor Crouch as well. One to Canada, the other to
Italy.
Yeah. Thank you, Tracy. What do you think of that?
Well, if you're governor, you get to go to Italy. And if you're lieutenant governor, you get to go to Canada. Say no more. But seeing our partnerships expand, and actually speaking of Canada, for so many years, it's been our primary trade partner, for at least 30 years, Mike, I think, something like that. So deepening, strengthening those relationships and allowing business to grow, develop that way is strategic and important.
Christina talked about transformative projects, and I think you could look at Electric Works in Fort Wayne as being a transformative project for that city. $400+ million project got a boost this week with some public funding. Mike, you're a native of Fort Wayne.
Right.
How big is that, or important is that?
Fort Wayne's a buzz about this development project, and this is just another step in this progress. I think a lot of people have been taking a wait and see approach, and now I think it's ready to light this up. It's exciting, I think, for the region because it's very much a talent attraction hub play. Most of the development looks at education and research space. About a third of it looks at innovation space. It'll certainly have retail, restaurants, apartments up there as well, and recreational space, but it's very much about driving that talent pipeline up there that's so important for the region.
Why are these projects, you see communities, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, Evansville, undertaking these kinds of projects?
Well, I mean, part of it's a regional cities initiative. It's just really move things along in those places. But, I think we've, maybe not done as much investment in the sort of capital projects, both private and public sector, in our major industrial, older industrial cities, Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, that would be on the national scene that way. This really, I think, marks a turnaround, and it's going to bring people, it's going to bring jobs, it's going to do the type of things that those policy initiatives were designed to do.
I want to get your take also, Mike. The report came out this week from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics that Indiana among the top 10 in wage growth, which is something that's been a real challenge for Indiana for a long time.
Right. If you look at us, we should probably be in the middle of the pack in wage growth. Being in the top 10 means that not only are people moving here, but the composition of the labor force is shifting in important ways. We're seeing here in central Indiana growth in the high-tech jobs are taking advantage of a much better human capital that the city has been able to attract over the past generation or two. We've also seen a lot of manufacturing jobs, and these are mostly going to be the really advanced manufacturing jobs that pay better. So good news for Indiana. Not unexpected, but certainly good news.
Changing face of healthcare. We saw another major announcement this week. Franciscan Health eyeing a $130 million investment in an orthopedic hospital in Hamilton County. The investment in Hamilton County in particular, in a number of areas, but in healthcare is substantial.
Boom, boom, boom. I guess my only regret is that healthcare is such big business in Indiana because we do tend to be one of the unhealthier states. But it certainly is interesting to see the intersection of technology, healthcare, infrastructure, and how we're going to support the good health of Hoosiers over time, particularly because access to healthcare in hospitals is not as widespread or dispersed as we'd like, county to county, statewide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that access point is a good one, and you see different trends happening in this market, the community hospitals, smaller, more accessible hospitals like St. Vincent's Dunn and Castleton that you covered earlier. Those are important things. And with Franciscan, I mean, it's the aging population that we have, the need for hip replacements and these things, and they're responding to that.
Always like to end on sports. Certainly it was a tough week for the Brickyard this year because of the weather. The dirt track attracted big crowds, but the weather really washed a lot of the events out there. It was also a big week in college football. In fact, Ball State and Notre Dame played at Notre Dame. It was a big game. And I remember 3 years ago, I think it was 2016, right after the announcement was made of this game, there was a prediction made right on this set. Mike, Ball State, maybe close to getting a new coach, a former player. Will that make the prospects for Ball State football go north?
Yeah, we're looking forward to that Notre Dame game in 3 years, and I think it's
he
important
predicted
for
a
us.
Ball State victory.
I'm telling you right now, we've got the quarterback to do it. Absolutely. It's college football breaks your heart, but I think we're looking at a good season in the fall.
okay, you predicted a win, and I will tell you, you came pretty close because Ball State, you clearly beat the line. So it was a good game.
For an economist, that was as close as we'll ever get.
That was very good. It was a great weekend for Ball State. I know they've got IU this weekend. So Mike Hicks, Christina Hale, Mike Marker, thanks one and all. We'll be right back.
Chirp, chirp.
Inside Indiana Business is Indiana's only statewide business television program that's seen weekly on the PBS member station, WFYI in Indianapolis, and 13 other affiliates around the state. And, of course, they're always on radio. You hear us bring you the Inside Indiana Business radio report mornings and afternoons. And you can find more Inside Indiana Business on-air programming by going to their website, insideindianabusiness.com, or you can go to their YouTube channel as well. Just search for Inside Indiana Business. This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. And an Olympic athlete is spreading the message of love and acceptance around Northwest Indiana in advance of National Bullying Prevention Month. Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson has the story.
Leading up to October's National Bullying Prevention Month, American Licorice Company is partnering with Team USA track and field athlete Norris Frederick and the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Northwest Indiana to spread a message of self-love and inspiration. They have embarked on the grassroots community effort to address the alarming suicide rates among youth in Indiana. They are also looking to raise awareness of the life-changing services and programs offered at Boys and Girls Club of Greater Northwest Indiana. Frederick hopes his involvement and the anti-bullying campaign brings about greater acceptance.
My hope is just that people embrace that it's okay to be different and that you're fine, and it's fine. Like, you know, embrace what makes you different and appreciate the differences in others is huge. If we lived in a world where everybody was the same, you know, it'd be boring and we would fight about something else. And now that we do live in such a diverse world where everybody's different, like, embrace it, take it in, learn something.
In the campaign, the organizations have the collective goal of making a positive impact in the lives of both the youth living in Northwest Indiana and beyond. Christy Schaefer, Vice President of Marketing at American Licorice Company, says the message they want to get across to kids is to embrace what makes you unique and appreciate the differences in others. Frederick has been speaking at schools and clubs throughout the region with the message. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Sharon Jackson.
There is a new tuition-free full-time public school program that is underway in the Gary Community School Corporation that is now accepting enrollment applications for the 2018-2019 school year. It is called the Gary Digital Academy. And with us to talk about Gary Digital Academy, we have Rachel Goodwin, who's the principal of this school in Gary. Rachel, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, first tell us, what is Gary Digital Academy?
It's a program that is part of the educational options offered by the Gary Community School Corporation. It is a full-time academic program where students would be coming on site for 2 days a week at the Gary Area Career Center, and they'd be working with certified teachers, and the rest of the week they'll be receiving instruction virtually with their teachers as well and working on their online courses. Students would be coming, like I said, Monday and Tuesday, but the center is open Monday through Thursday for students and families that need additional support, so they're able to come to the center and work with certified staff.
Is this blended approach to public education a little bit different for the city of Gary, or have you heard about this before? Have other schools in the Gary area used this before, or is this really unique to Gary?
It's unique to Gary, not unique to Indiana. There is a school in Indianapolis that has a similar blended program, but I have not heard of another Gary program like this.
Do we find that in doing your research and the company that you're working with, K-12 Incorporated, has helped giving you the curriculum and the guidance on this program, do they feel that this might be an interesting program to try in Gary, especially for young people that maybe need a little help along the way?
They are. I mean, what's wonderful about working with K-12 is they do have a team that comes in and supports myself as well as the teachers to ensure that they're provided the right resources and support to implement this type of programming. They have that experience. They worked across the nation, and so they are able to provide some best practices and just even be there from the ground up to ensure that we have process and procedures and the best instructional strategies implemented to support our families and especially our students. This is a great approach because it really provides personalization to the instruction and to the educational experience for the child. So if a student is struggling, there are ways to ensure that they're still meeting those standards, but maybe they might need a little bit more time or more one-on-one time with the teacher and maybe a different approach to master these concepts, because that's one thing that we're striving for is mastery-based. We want students to really master these concepts and standards so that they can be a successful student into high school. The other thing that is very fortunate is just having the resource also of the school district. So working closely with the assistant superintendent to ensure that we have all supports needed for students with an IEP, or if they want to do, you know, extracurricular activities, they can still participate in those district programs. And as well as, you know, you have those students that are really advanced. You know, maybe you have a kindergartner who's reading at a third grade level. Having this approach, these online courses, they have access to that content, and we're able to then challenge those students and have them move forward as well.
Are you finding that with this particular program, that because it's based basically within the Gary Community School Corporation, that it will give parents, caregivers, an opportunity to have maybe some resources, computers and the internet or anything like that for the student that they may not have otherwise, and this will benefit them?
Yeah, so when you do enroll in the Gary Digital Academy, each student does receive their own computer, as well as the access to the online courses. But within those online courses, there are tons of materials and manipulatives that are provided for the learning coach, which is the parent, as well as the student, to ensure that they're understanding the online, you know, curriculum and concepts. So that is a benefit. And then we also provide internet reimbursements for families that qualify.
We're talking with Rachel Goodwin, who is the principal of Gary Digital Academy. It's a new school that's being established in Gary, working not only as a K-12 incorporated facility with the curriculum and the like from that company, but also working directly with the Gary Community School Corporation in this. Because you have the Gary Schools opportunities there, does transportation get provided for the students? Because they will have to come into the Gary Area Career Center a couple times a week.
Yes. The students that live within the district, within the attendance boundaries of the Gary School District, will have access to transportation.
What type of, if any, placement exam is required for a student to get involved in the Digital Academy?
There are no placement exams. We do provide or administer an assessment when they, you know, the first day that they're at the Learning Center. That means they're first on site, just so that we get a baseline data on the student to see where, you know, they are excelling and areas that we might need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So you do want to have some idea more about the youngster and what are youngsters, I guess, if you have more than one that's in the family that is going to be enrolled in the Gary Digital Academy. And so you want to know a little bit more about these students to see how they do, what they've known, what they've had experiences in classes before, if any. And so this way they're ready to go for the new school year.
Correct. So especially this really helps, again, with that personalized approach that our teachers will use, you know, that baseline data as well as how they are performing in the curriculum and in their courses on site and on the online courses. And then we're able to then adjust to, you know, where we need to push them and where we need to provide additional academic support.
Tell us a little bit more about some of the core subjects that are going to be covered there at the Gary Digital Academy, what these are and how they're going to benefit the young people as they're moving their way through the Gary Community School Corporation.
Sure, we're going to be focusing on, you know, English, literature, you know, those type of courses in the ELA suite, as well as mathematics, science, history. We are going to be also offering art. And, you know, if they go through these courses with us at the Gary Digital Academy, if they ever want to go into a more 5-day-a-week traditional type of model, they're going to be able to transition quite smoothly and, you know, in those schools. So this is a great opportunity to, you know, like I said, get that personalized approach, feel, you know, get that academic support if needed. And if the parents would like to go into a more traditional type of schooling, then they're able to then transition into any of those Gary
school district schools.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that a lot of parents have shown interest in this to get their youngsters enrolled for the GDA here in time for classes to start?
We have found people that are interested and parents that wanting to enroll in the school, especially, you know, in the younger grades. Because, you know, for some parents, you know, going from preschool to kindergarten can be a big jump. This gives them an opportunity in those primary grades for parents to still be very actively involved in the educational process. It's a big partnership between us and the parents and the community to ensure the students are supported. And so we're looking forward to offering this option to all Gary families. And anyone actually living in Lake County will be able to participate in this program, because as long as they're able to bring their students to the center, they are more than welcome to enroll.
Do you find that this is an advantage, I'm sure, for them, because they'd only have to physically come into the Gary Area Career Center 2 days a week, and the rest of the time they spend in front of the computer taking their lessons?
Yes, I think it is a benefit. And one thing to keep in mind, you know, we do have the online sessions, but they're not on the computer for 6 hours straight or anything like that. We do ensure that there is a balance. You know, there is offline activities that must be completed, and then they're verified, you know, by their teacher, as well as online sessions as well. So this gives them an opportunity too for families, especially students that have other interests that they want to have time to be able to participate in, as well as, you know, being part of a high-quality school.
Now, Rachel, we started the conversation talking about the fact that a company called K-12 Incorporated is offering up the curriculum and assistance on the program that the Gary Digital Academy is setting up here. Has this model worked very well in other communities that have this in?
Yes, it's worked well. And like I said, there is a program like this in Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Arizona and some other, you know, schools and districts across the nation.
Now, if anyone's interested in getting looking into it more, certainly, and maybe actually going ahead to get their youngsters enrolled in the Gary Digital Academy.
Simply just go to, you know, the K-12 website, so k12.com. They're able to then see a parent portal where they're able to start in registering. They can also just even contact the school district, and they will connect them directly to us and help them and support them through this enrollment process.
Well, Rachel, thank you for spending time with us talking about what the Gary Digital Academy is, what it does, the benefits it will have for young people in the Gary Community School Corporation, and hope that a lot of youngsters are signed up to be involved in the programs, and hope that this coming school year, the very first one for the GDA, goes very well.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk about our school.
Well, you're welcome. Rachel Goodwin is the principal of Gary Digital Academy. The Northwest Indiana Food Council will hold its second annual Farm Hop Series coming up on Saturday, September 22nd here in Northwest Indiana. Learn more about where some of our local food comes from and the great opportunities that are out there for such locally grown food and other products as well. Let's talk with the president of the Northwest Indiana Food Council, Ann Massey. Hi, Ann. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, for folks that are not familiar with what Farm Hop is, let's do a little primer first to let them know what a Farm Hop is and the intention behind all of the events that are always circling around it.
Sure. The Farm Hop is a series of farm tours. We have 5 this year. Last year we had 4. And the concept is to allow people, consumers, other farmers, or just folks who are interested in where their food comes from, to get out onto family farms that grow our food. Most of these farms, actually all of the farms, aren't open to the public any other time of the year, so it's a really special opportunity to get to see what they do.
I understand some of these farms have a very unique products that they put out or operations they get involved in, so it's great, I guess, to have them around.
Yeah, the Farm Hop this year is really diverse. We have homesteaders who grow things right in their front lawn or their backyard, like completely have filled their front lawn with produce, ranging from really interesting varieties like ashwagandha, St. John's wort, different types of kales and African herbs. I think someone's even growing bananas and avocados.
Mm-hmm.
We also have conventional farmers who grow mint, tomatoes, corn, and soy. Indiana is one of the largest mint producers. And Wrigley actually gets a lot of their mint extract for their gum from our region.
Oh, really? That's interesting to know, too. We should mention that Farm Hop series of events happens, as we mentioned, on those 2 days, August 11th and on September 22nd. On each day, there will be from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And let's go down the list here. Let's look first here at the one coming up very soon. On August 11th, there are going to be a couple of separate tours, one leaving from Gary and the other from Valparaiso. Let's go down each tour and talk about them, please.
Sure. So there, we have two tours coming out of Gary. There are well over 40 urban farms and gardens, community gardens in Gary. So it's hard to pack in one tour. So we're doing two tours this year. The September 22nd Gary tour also departs from Art House and will visit Faith Farm, which they have three or four high tunnels covered produce. So they've got an extended growing season and have a really, really diverse set of vegetables that they're growing. They're also putting in an orchard and bees and chickens. And they've done this really quickly. I think they're only in their second year, so it's wow. really cool to see how far they've come. And then Peace Farms and Gardens, they are in an old armory, a military armory, and they're doing a workforce development program with their garden, and also have vegetables and chickens, and it's a really fun place to visit too. Stewart House Urban Farm and Garden is a little different. They are a community garden, and people can rent plots. They grow fruits and vegetables for the community, have their own market, and several community members have their own garden plots there. They've been around for quite a while. I think they've been around for at least 7 or 8 years, so it's kind of neat to see their evolution. J1's farm, he's also a homestead, similar to a Rose for Yamina from the first tour, where he's got some really neat innovative solutions for farming on a small plot, the way he collects his water. I know he's growing peanuts. He's got some really cool things on his homestead. Mm-hmm. And then that tour will round out with Thea Bowman Leadership Academy. They are a charter school in Gary that has a farming program, an agriculture program for their students, with a hands-on learning garden with goats and chickens and vegetables.
That's great. That's great. Now, I know there's a separate tour on September 22nd that is leaving from La Porte, and there are a number of, I guess, opportunities to check out what is going on in La Porte County. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, this tour is really different. I guess they're all really different. I feel like a broken record. the tour starts out at the PAC Center, and the PAC Center is a really inspiring organization. They are run by State Street Community Church. They operate a community kitchen food pantry, and they do community meals every week where anyone is welcome to come. And to support that, they also have their Jackson Street Community Garden, which has plots available to rent for free for community members. They also tend a small space for the pantry itself, and they have a free U-Pick area where anyone can come and pick vegetables that need it. They also have a little stand where people can leave extra produce to share with other folks in the community. And they're working on another center a couple blocks over called Brighton Street Center, where they're going to have a youth training center to continue on the education from the little ones all the way through middle school and into high school. And then that farm will continue on to Tryon Farm, which is a community that is designed by one architect who wanted to honor the heritage of the original farmstead. So the homes are all highly efficient and environmentally friendly. And we'll be stopping at one of the homes within that community that has a beautiful garden full of exotic fruits and vegetables there, and lunch will be served there. And that tour will finish at Rainfield Farm, which is one of the a very highly successful organic vegetable farm in our area that does wholesale to grocery stores and schools. They also have a CSA for the community, and they do farmers markets as well.
That's great. Now, we know we round out the day on September 22nd and the third of the three tours in Valparaiso. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this tour in Valparaiso, it's also got some really fun farms to go to. It starts at Three Boys and Some Chicks Farm, which is it's an absolute hoot because they've got almost 600 egg layers on a couple acres, and they're all free range, and they're very... very rambunctious chickens. There's chickens on the roof of the house. There's chickens on the cars. There's chickens in the trees. There's chickens everywhere. It's a great stop for kids. And the family, I believe they've got eight children. They're just big and loving and really clearly love what they do. Then the farm hot bus moves on to Triple B Tilapia, which is an organic tilapia fish farm down in DeMott, and then we'll go to Perkins Good Earth Farm, which is organic, diversified farm, and the farmer is actually a soil scientist, so he has a really interesting approach and is a big mentor to a lot of other farmers in the area. And that's where lunch will be served, and the tour will round out at Pioneering Pig Homestead, which is another diversified farm that's got tons of fruit trees, heritage breed animals, goats, donkeys, cows, chickens. They also do bees, and they roast their own coffee. They kind of do it all.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. So many places that you can check out on any of the tours for the 2018 Farm Hop series of tours coming up here. The sponsor, of course, as we mentioned, is the Northwest Indiana Food Council. Now, if anybody's interested and would like to sign up and register for any of the tours, how do they do that?
Sure. It's really easy. You can go to our website, nwifoodcouncil.org/farmhop. Our tickets are available there. Again, they're only $20, and that includes lunch. Children 12 and under are only $10.
Wow. What a great opportunity to spend a weekend to take advantage of seeing some great farms that grow local food and have a great, I guess, in a way, local entertainment as well, too. You'll certainly enjoy the chickens, it sounds like, on the tour from Valparaiso, to be sure. That's Sam Massey with the Northwest Indiana Food Council, and that is it for Regionally Speaking for today and this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to our reporters, Kelly Smith with the Herald Argus and the News Dispatch in LaPorte County, and to Gary Dick with Inside Indiana Business. Hope you'll join us on Monday.